Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, thank you, Brent. We are so fortunate to be part of the Empower Radio family, and we're grateful, too, to all of our listeners. We're ready to begin with yes right now, and my guest today is Tonio Di Giacomo. Did I say that right, Tony?
You did. Awesome. Admirable job there.
It's a fun name to say, Di Giacomo. Tonio is a comedian and an actor and a writer and a lover in the truest sense of the word and so much more. And we're going to be talking about something you may not have noticed but need to begin paying attention to, and that's the danger in measuring your self-worth by your net worth. When we do that, it impacts how we feel about our dreams and, most importantly, how motivated we are to move forward on our dreams. And it has a direct impact on our sense of well-being and happiness, too. Tonio, it's so good to be talking with you today. And once again, I'm struck and grateful for the Internet, for the power it has to make connections that turn into meaningful and important friendships. And I count you as a meaningful and important friend. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here and an honor, of course. Yeah, the Internet thing you bring up is interesting because although, you know, we've never met, I feel like, you know, of course, I've had the advantage of reading your beautiful book. But I feel like, you know, of course, I know you through the Internet exchanges that we've had and now that's progressed to email correspondence. And I certainly, you know, feel that I can count you, you know, as a friend, although we've never been able to break bread together, so to speak.
It's really an incredible thing, and some people, I think, poke fun at these kinds of connections, but I found them to be truly important and memorable. How are things in Miami today?
They're beautiful here. You know, the weather in Miami is warming up a little bit for us. You know, we had a little bit of a cold spell by our standards, of course. You know, if it gets below 60 here, we close the schools and start salting the streets, you know.
Do you get mittens out, too?
And yeah, we go into full-on panic. You know, everybody's out in the park as it's 63 degrees, but the order's restored a little bit. We're back to the weather we're used to. It's a nice, sunny, warm day today.
Well, we're having a typical winter New Hampshire day, so we do have our mittens out and our hats out, but not much snow. Tonio, I know that because you actually are the one that we suggested that this be at least the beginning of our conversation, and I think many of us do have that tendency to measure our value, both internally and then also as we relate to other people in our world, in terms of how financially successful we are. And I know you have some thoughts about that, so I'm going to turn it over to you to just begin that conversation and see where it goes.
Sure. You know, it's interesting, the particular framing, even, you know, by measuring, you know, one's self-worth by net worth. I think that's kind of a good way to crystallize it. But it, of course, I think encompasses, you know, a lot more than that. It's a very pervasive process because success, you know, this dubious thing, this pursuit of success, which is, you know, I think in many ways, a beautiful part of the American experience, I think also can be, you know, to some degree, a double-edged sword. And I think that that's largely because very often we begin to seek external solutions for what may be internal problems. At the risk of being, you know, sounding California New Age, something in the nature of spiritual or motivational or personal problems. And I think that I think there's a healthy place for success. I think self-esteem comes through esteemable acts, and I think a very important part of happiness is the rewarding process of setting goals and achieving those goals, and that genuine sense of, you know, self-worth of you know, having fulfilled your potential. But at the same time, I think we begin to look at the markers and not necessarily the process. And so what happens is those indicators of success, I think, begin to, you know, override the actual healthy impulse to achieve something, you know, worthwhile.
Do you think that we do this more to ourselves, Tonio, than, I mean, because I think it's easy for me to look around and see people who have made great contributions, and who I imagine have lived very fulfilled lives, and people who feel a great sense of self-worth, who have not been necessarily successful by the yardstick of financial success or net worth. But I think we have a harder time doing that for ourselves. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great point, actually. It's something, you know, I have this sort of this saying that I sometimes mutter to myself that, you know, very often serenity is just the management of perspective. And I think I look around at a lot of friends that I have that I have a great deal of respect and admiration for. And I know that none of it is attached. You know, some of them may or may not be successful. And I know that none of my respect and admiration is attached to, you know, how well that what their bank account is. Right. You know, I know that it's predicated on the fact that they, you know, they seem to stand for the type of values they have, so to speak, what I want. And I don't mean that in a materialistic sense. I mean that in the sense that they seem to have, you know, a real ability to live life. You know, I think about that here. I think about that quote by Emerson. I was pulling it up because I couldn't remember it. If I could just read this real quickly.
Yeah, please.
To laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition. To know even one life has breathed easier because you lived, this is to have succeeded. And I think it's beautiful. Of course, Ralph Waldo Emerson was, you know, incredibly eloquent. But I think I know so many people who are like that. Yet when I measure myself, I it's easy for me to fall back into the same traps while I pursue those things in earnest. It's easy for me to fall back into the same traps of still taking measure of, you know, what I have or where I am relative to either my age group or my demographic or whoever's standing next to me in the elevator, quite frankly, you know, with regard to how, you know, how well we're doing financially or what car they're driving.
You know, it seems like if we can begin by understanding that in terms of how we view other people, then I think the being able to internalize that and begin to be willing or open to viewing ourselves in that same light might have a chance. Do you think it's important to have people in your life that can sort of mirror those values back to you?
I absolutely do. I absolutely do. I think, you know, I think that in any there's a culture of sorts in any group of people. And I think that, you know, you were talking about, you know, whether or not we it's imposed on ourselves. You know, I think there's different cultures. You know, I think there's cultures that, you know, there's if you have, you know, the type of group of friends that you intentionally seek out, or the type of support group and peer group that you seek out that honestly tries to be better person, you know, be better people. They try to pursue enlightenment. They're in good humor, they're in good cheer, and yet they have a healthy sense of what's serious and what's appropriate. And I think you seek those people out, then, you know, then what'll happen is that you yourself can have an appropriate reflection. Because my problem is exactly that. I very often have been prone to in the past, and in my later years, fortunately, have made great progress on it, but I use the wrong mirrors. I tend to look necessarily in the wrong direction. And again, sometimes that's a concerted effort. One of the things I love about your book is that it's about, you know, it's about a concerted effort to focus on where you're beginning, you know, in which direction you're facing, less about speed and more about direction. And I like that a lot.
You know, thank you for saying that. When you read that quote a moment ago, the thing that resonated the most with me, and I would have to hear it again to even see if that was even an important part of the message, but the interconnectedness that we have with other people and the responsibility that we have to look out for each other, and also the joy or sense of well-being and self-worth and even happiness that comes from being connected with other people in our lives and actually looking out for their welfare.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's been a part of the journey for me to be able to distinguish. You know, we all have virtues, I think. Everybody's fortunate enough to have certain gifts and assets. But, you know, I think what makes them a virtue is whether or not you use these assets as a tool or a weapon. I think throughout history, you know, we've heard the examples of these horrible dictators, and somebody will say, but he was a genius, and as though in some way that would, you know, there was a conflict there. And it took me, you know, a long time in my pursuit of trying to feel okay with me. You know, I spent a lot of time being greater than or less than, and it took a long time in the process of that pursuit for me to understand that a lot of times I was taking qualities which may have been, you know, which may be assets and using them as weapons as opposed to tools. And I'm very, very conscientious when I'm around people. I love to be around intelligent people naturally, but I'm very conscientious when I'm around people because I think there's a tendency, whatever quality may be, wit. As a comedian, I'm around a lot of comedians. And sometimes, you know, it can be a very cutting bunch. You know, it's kind of a tough racket. And sometimes I think they can use those qualities. They can use the qualities of being witty and being sharp as a weapon of sorts to you know, sort of pin themselves into the place that they want to be. And I try to be very conscientious, because it's easy to do. I mean, we all want to stand on our asset and put our best face forward, but sometimes that's at the expense of other people. And I think when you feel connected with other people, you're the right size. You don't feel necessarily greater than or less than. You understand that we have respective assets. Some of us are taller. I certainly wish I was. Some of us are faster. Some of us are better looking. Some people are great at math. But whatever those assets may be that we were already, I think, indoctrinated with, you know, from our outset, those things are only valuable if we use them as tools and in the spirit of, I think, compassion and character, what I call character.
Tony, are you able to fold sort of some of these thoughts into your comedy?
You know, it's, you know, as I said, first of all, you know, comedy is kind of a tough racket. All you really need to know about the show business is that break a leg means good luck. You know, I think that, you know, I'm quite certain if you were to search, I feel like if you were to search, that probably started with an understudy somewhere, you know, as the star was going out on the stage, you know, because there's really no other industry that I know that sentiment, wishing somebody harm to themselves, is an appropriate sentiment for good luck. You know, two guys are in the office and Bill says, hey, Bill, you know, Bob, I'm getting promoted tomorrow. And Bill says, hey, all right, get cancer. It's not exactly something that, you know, it means good luck. I don't think it does. But, you know, in the comedy business, you have to toe the line a little bit. I will say that, you know, the spirit of my comedy, I don't have the kind of angry rant comedian in me. And I come from a political background, and I sort of started with observations and speech writing that were funny. And, you know, that progressed into the process of joke writing, which I always liked doing. But when I really sort of found my feet as a comedian was when I began to be able to kind of laugh at myself. And I would say that if people feel, you know, if people are laughing at other people through the course of my act, it's really mostly because they're laughing at themselves reflected in me. You know, I'm not particularly the type of comedian that spends a lot of time you know, pointing out the shortcomings of others, because to be honest with you, I no longer really have the angst and anger necessary to fuel that kind of comedy for a sustained amount of time. You know, it's very difficult.
In my sense, and I could be completely missing the boat on this one, but truly great performers, whether they're actors or comedians or whatever, the ones that really are memorable are ones that people would say have charisma. And to me, charisma, and I know that has some spiritual dimensions to it, but it's a sense of authenticity that comes through. And so my guess is that A, you do have charisma, and B, that comes through irregardless of what stories you're telling or what jokes you're telling.
Well, that might be generous on your part. I'm certain there's audience member that would dispute that. But, but you know, I've always found that concept of charisma fascinating. We've all kind of known some of those people in our lives who are just kind of magnetic. You know, they always seem to sort of fail up, and they just seem to, you know, they seem to draw people around them. And I've always been fascinated by that concept because as a somewhat sort of, as an observer, if you will, of life, as a chronicler, you know, writers are often spectators more than they are participants. I've often been fascinated by, like, what are the gears there? What are the working parts? And it's very hard to dissect, and I think you're right. It is sort of it is a spiritual process, but I do think sincerity is a huge part of it. I think that, you know, I can't remember who said it, but it may have been Warhol, but somebody once said that, you know, you can't judge the quality of art, only the sincerity of it. And, you know, because I think, you know, art are subjective things, you know, that we love. It's easy for everybody to sort of, you know, poke a hole in it if it doesn't, you know, doesn't tickle their bone. But one thing that you can do is tell whether somebody is being insincere. And people are much more intuitive, I think, than a lot of artists would give them credit for in that regard.
I definitely agree with that. You know, I got a notice on Facebook just before we got connected this afternoon. One of my Facebook Begin With Yes pals put a quote on, and it said it's attributed to John Lennon, and it says, "When I was 8 years old, my mother always told me that happiness was the key to life. When I went to school, they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I wrote down happy. They told me I didn't understand the assignment, and I told them they didn't understand life." And that just seemed to resonate with what we're talking about today, because not only do we create an identity for ourselves around our net worth, but we tend to do that around what we do for work. Mm-hmm. And when people, you know, when you're meeting new people and you're in a social situation, almost one of the most questions that come up the most often is, what do you do for work?
Yeah,
as if that's a way of knowing who you are, and I think it's an attempt to know who you are, but but I'm not sure that it connects directly.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think, you know, even I think when, you know, at various stages of our life, you know, in college it's what's your major. At various stages of our life, I think there's this attempt to sort of take a snapshot of somebody by our already established value system. You know, we have a sort of map of reality, and I think that in that map of reality, certain professions hold certain esteem and are indicators of whether or not somebody is, is, for lack of a better term, a slacker or a successful person. So sometimes I don't think there's necessarily, I agree with you, I don't think there's bad intention in it. But I do think it's a little bit short-sighted, and it's funny that you bring it up, because about a year ago, I kind of made a policy not to answer that question, you know, and I went through a whole, catharsis, if you will, because I had had, like many people in this economy, I had had, you know, I had been doing fairly well for myself in a very conventional career track, and I certainly was not happy, and I know that this is not a particularly original story, but, you know, I wasn't particularly stimulated, and I know that from what I gather from your book, this is, you know, was very similar to the situation that you were in that led to, you know, part of the great, I think, epiphany, you know, that ultimately led to Begin With Yes. And so I decided that I was going to pursue my passions and begin writing what I wanted, not writing for other people as much. Mm-hmm. I was going to begin pursuing the comedy. I got very lucky and kind of got an audition and got cast into a tiny part in one episode of a television show, and that sort of like sparked that process of enjoying the acting. And the caveat there was that I could not continue to pursue conventional career tracks necessarily if I was pursuing the particular line of passions I was. And originally I took this. I took an overnight job, you know, at a hotel on weekends, which for me was very, very difficult because I had been for quite some time into my adulthood in a management and ownership, you know, position. And, you know, I decided that it wasn't going to be about what I was doing, you know, to make money. And a friend of mine was was their hotel, and they just sort of were like, hey, you know, you want to do this? And, you know, it was a great chance to sit and write overnight. I had a lot of time in my head. And it gave me a lot of time for reflection. But the one real problem I was having, as actualized as I would have liked to have believed that I was, is that I had a great deal of difficulty answering that question when I met people. I had a great deal of answering the question, you know, what do you do? Because, you know, I would like to say that I write and that, you know, that I'm a writer or that you know, whatever pursuit, you know, arouses my passion the most. But I know that what they're asking is, how do you pay the rent?
Right.
And to that end, I think it becomes sort of, you know, to some degree misleading, because I know, you know, many people that I'm not even really sure what they do, and they're, you know, they're pretty good friends of mine, and I have a great admiration for them, you know, things, the way they live their life and things that they do in terms of their passion, artists and such. And I don't really know how they pay the rent. And I decided that, you know, for my part, I wasn't really going to answer that question in that regard, you know, in regard to what they were asking, how do I pay the rent? And then, you know, over time, I just had to work that out on my own and realize that, you know, I was still falling a little bit into the same trap. I was still falling a little bit into the same trap of projecting, you know, a sense of inferiority, because I didn't feel like the answer was one that was, you know, was up to social standards. And, you know, that's, I think it's an unfortunate trap that, you know, that many people fall into. They go into careers that they don't particularly love or like because the title is better than the alternative for them.
Right. Fortunately, many of those people are at a later stage of life finding their way back to what they're really passionate about and what they really want to do because they love to do it. And I think that's a wonderful sort of movement that I'm beginning to see happen. Mm-hmm. Tonio, my experience of you, and it's confirmed by the conversation that we're having now and the email exchanges that we've had, and it's one of the things that I love about you, is that you don't hold back emotionally. You seem to be pretty quick to understand how you're feeling, and then you trust the feeling, and then you're not shy about expressing that. Is that just how you've always been, or have you worked at that?
No, that was definitely a process for me. And thank you, actually. That's about the highest order of compliment that I think I could receive at this point, because I grew up in a very traditional. I'm a Marine. I'm a former Marine, and you know, my first career was as a boxer. And both of those, I only say as indicators that those were more, I think, congruent to the type of environment that I grew up in. I grew up in you know, a Northern Italian, Boston North End Italian, you know, family that was not, you know, it carried forth, I think, particularly with males, it carried forth the I think, thank God, you know, now outmoded idea that a male's emotions are sort of, or people's emotions as they get older, you know, are sort of inconveniences to be dealt with in some type of, you know, mature manner. And I put, you know, my fingers up in the air making quotation marks, you know, when I say mature, because that was a big issue, you know, when I was younger, was that I had a lot of emotion inside me. You know, I always had, certainly, I always had the romantic writer spirit, and I couldn't reconcile that necessarily with an environment that I thought, you know, equated emotion with weakness. And I think that that's the first real breakthrough I had that will allow me to have any other, you know, fortunate breakthroughs I have for the rest of my life. And that is that emotions do matter. And I'll tell a quick story that's very interesting, that you were talking about John Lennon. My mother is no longer alive. She was a single parent after my father had passed away. And when I was just a teenager, it was just her and I, and we were here in Miami. She had moved down to Miami, you know, mercifully before I was born. My parents migrated here, so I spent summers up north and grew up down here. And I was, I liked a girl in sixth grade. I was crazy about her. You know, I had a crazy, crazy crush. And we were going out for a little bit, as little kids do. You know, we were boyfriend and girlfriend, and then she, you know, she just suddenly broke up with me, you know, as also kids are prone to do. But I was destroyed. I was really, really heartbroken. And it would have been easy, I think, for a parent to look at a sixth grade kid and say, get over it. You know, you're a little kid. But my mother sort of broke from, you know, my family tradition in that way. And it took me years to become grateful for it. But, you know, I remember I went to the school clinic sick because I couldn't even stay in class. And, you know, I was all heart sick, and I called my mom at work, and she left work. She dropped everything and came and picked me up and treated me like I was really hurt, like my emotions really mattered. And it seems kind of, almost a trite little story, but it really had an impact, because she never once trivialized it. You know, she just kind of treated like, you know, I know it hurts, but it'll get better. And it gave me the opportunity to treat my emotions like they mattered. And I fought through that through a lot of my early adult years, trying to fulfill an ideal that I thought was, you know, was ultimately expected of me. But the reality is that the people that I respect and that I love and that I admire are people who can be honest emotionally, they can be honest in fact.
You know, Tony, and it's not just about being honest with the emotional feelings that are positive, but sometimes we have to share feelings that are not so positive too.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think often those are the ones that most need to be shared, because if you're succeeding in surrounding yourself with people who have the same sort of spiritual values with you, if you will, I think you have an opportunity. You know, no two people tend to be sick at the same time, and so I'm fortunate that I get the experience of other people's experience very often. You know, and I'm not really sure that anything, you know, that we experience as human beings is really unique. I think we like to believe that, you know, all those, all, you know, in our pain that it's terminally unique. But fortunately for us, that's not true. I mean, your book is great evidence of that. And the fact that it resonates with people is great evidence of that. That it may be a matter of degree, but we do experience the same human frailties. We're all bound, you know, by the same thread of human need and sometimes want and pain and lack of sureness, and doubt is a part of everybody's journey. And I think that the beauty of surrounding yourself with people who have the same desire to live a happy and joyful and productive life is that you get to see how they deal with those things and to some degree grow from that. And I do share I have very close friends that I share things with when I'm going through them and I'm not sure how to deal with them.
Tonio, that's believe it or not, we're out of time, and you have to promise to come back so we can continue this conversation. And that's such a beautiful way to end today's conversation, at least. And I appreciate you being here so much.
Thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure. A pleasure and an honor.
Will you come back?
Of course. Absolutely.
All right.
What you wish for.
No, I definitely want to keep this conversation going. So we'll say goodbye to Tonio right now, and goodbye to all of you, thanking our friends at Empower Radio, thanking everyone on Facebook who signs in every day. You know, I think you rock, and we'll see you next time. Thanks again, Antonio. We'll be back next week. Have a great rest of your day.